Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Krishna Balaram, Jaya Krishna Balaram, Krishna Balaram, Jaya Krishna Balaram. Jaya Radha Shyam Sundar, Radha Shyam Sundar Radhe. Jaya Gauranitai, 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 Jaya Gauranitai. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada. Nitai Gaura Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Nitai Gaura Hari Bol.
Jai Om Vishnupad Paramhansa Parivrajakacharya Shtotra Sat. His Divine Grace Abhay Charana Arvinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Shri Shri Krishna Balaram Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Shyam Sundar Ki Jai. Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories, all glories, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, as it is, Chapter 5, Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness, Text 29. Bhoktaram yajna tapasam sarvaloka maha ishvaram suhridam sarva bhutanam jnatva mam शांतिम ऋच्छति। भोक्तारं यज्ञतपसाम् सर्वलोकमहेश्वरम् सुहृदं सर्वभूतानां ज्ञात्वा मां शान्तिं ऋच्छति। भोक्तारं यज्ञतपसाम् सर्वलोकमहेश्वरम् सुहृदं सर्वभूतानां ज्ञात्वा मां शान्तिं ऋच्छति। भोक्तारं यज्ञतपसाम् सर्वलोकमहेश्वरम् सुहृदं सर्वभूतानां ज्ञात्वा मां शान्तिं ऋच्छति। भोक्तारं सर्वलोकमहेश्वरम् सुहृदं सर्वभूतानां ज्ञात्वा मां शान्तिं ऋच्छति। भोक्तारं यज्ञतपसाम् सर्वलोकमहेश्वरम् सुहृदं सर्वभूतानां ज्ञात्वा मां शान्तिं ऋच्छति। भोक्तारं यज्ञतपसाम् सर्वलोकमहेश्वरम् सुहृदं सर्वभूतानां ज्ञात्वा मां शान्तिं ऋच्छति। लेडीज प्लीज। भोक्तारं यज्ञतपसाम् सर्वलोकमहेश्वरम् सुहृदं सर्वभूतानां ज्ञात्वा मां शान्तिं ऋच्छति। भोक्तारं यज्ञतपसाम् सर्वलोकमहेश्वरम् सुहृदं सर्वभूतानां ज्ञात्वा मां शान्तिं ऋच्छति। भोक्तारं यज्ञतपसाम् सर्वलोकमहेश्वरम् सुहृदं सर्वभूतानां ज्ञात्वा मां शान्तिं ऋच्छति। भोक्तारं यज्ञतपसाम् सर्वलोकमहेश्वरम् सुहृदं सर्वभूतानां ज्ञात्वा मां शान्तिं ऋच्छति। भोक्तारं, प्लीज रिमेम्बर इट इज भोक्तारं नॉट भोक्ताराम। ओके, सो व्हेन वी चैंट द वर्सेस वी शुड बी वेरी केयरफुल अबाउट ईच वर्ड एंड इट्स प्रोनाउंसिएशन। इट्स अ गुड हैबिट टू कल्टिवेट टू बी वेरी केयरफुल व्हेन वी सी द वर्ड्स। भोक्तारं द बेनिफिशियरी यज्ञ of sacrifices, tapasam, and penances, and austerities, sarvaloka, of all planets and the demigods thereof, maha ishwaram, the supreme lord, suhridam, the benefactor, sarva, of all bhutanam, the living entities, jnatva, thus knowing, mam, me, Lord Krishna, shantim, relief from material pangs. Richchati, one achieves. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Translation. A person in full consciousness of Me, knowing Me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. Purport. The conditioned souls within the clutches of the illusory energy are all anxious to attain peace in the material world. But they do not know the formula for peace, which is explained in this part of the Bhagavad Gita. The greatest peace formula is simply this. Lord Krishna is the beneficiary in all human activities. Men should offer everything to the transcendental service of the Lord because He is the proprietor of all planets and the demigods thereon. No one is greater than He. He is greater than the greatest of the demigods, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. In the Vedas, Shvetashvatara Upanishad 6.7, the Supreme Lord is described as Tam Ishvaranam Paramam Maheshwaram. Under the spell of illusion, living entities are trying to be lords of all they survey, but actually they are dominated by the material energy of the Lord. The Lord is the master of material nature, and the conditioned souls are under the stringent rules of material nature. Unless one understands these bare facts, it is not possible to achieve peace in the world, either individually or collectively. This is the sense of Krishna consciousness. Lord Krishna is the supreme predominator, and all living entities, including the great demigods, are His subordinates. One can attain perfect peace only in complete Krishna consciousness. This fifth chapter is a practical explanation of Krishna consciousness, generally known as Karma Yoga. The question of mental speculation as to how Karma Yoga can give liberation is answered herewith. To work in Krishna consciousness is to work with the complete knowledge of the Lord as the predominator. Such work is not different from transcendental knowledge. Direct Krishna consciousness is Bhakti Yoga, and Jnana Yoga is a path leading to Bhakti Yoga. Krishna consciousness means to work in full knowledge of one's relationship with the Supreme Absolute. And the perfection of this consciousness is full knowledge of Krishna or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A pure soul is the eternal servant of God as His fragmental part and parcel. He comes into contact with Maya, illusion, due to the desire to lord it over Maya. And that is the cause of His many sufferings. As long as He is in contact with matter, He has to execute work in terms of material necessities. Krishna consciousness, however, brings one into spiritual life even while one is within the jurisdiction of matter. For it is an arousing of spiritual experience by practice in the material world. The more one is advanced, the more he is freed from the clutches of matter. The Lord is not partial toward anyone. Everything depends on one's practical performance of duties in Krishna consciousness, which helps one control the senses in every respect and conquer the influence of desire and anger. And one who stands fast in Krishna consciousness, controlling the above mentioned passions, remains factually in the transcendental stage or Brahma Nirvana. The Eightfold Yoga mysticism is automatically practiced in Krishna consciousness because the ultimate purpose is served. There is a gradual process of elevation in the practice of Yama, Niyam, Asan, Pranayam, Pratyahar, Dharana, Dhyan, and Samadhi. But these only preface perfection by devotional service, which alone can award peace to the human being. It is the highest perfection of life. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the fifth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of Karma Yoga or action in Krishna consciousness. Kindly repeat the translation. A person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padang Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gauratvishe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So this is a very important verse from the Bhagavad Gita, a verse that was very frequently quoted by Srila Prabhupada in his lectures, popularly known as the peace formula verse. And that is why now we have this same verse going on for several days. Peace is something very elusive, as Prabhupada explains here in the purport. We don't have peace on earth. Seems like the earth is going to pieces because nobody knows the formula to keep everyone together. That formula is Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada uses the term predominator to indicate Krishna's position. That unless we accept Krishna as a predominator in our life individually and collectively, there is no question of peace. All other attempts to bring about peace are simply artificial and futile. They will never really be able to bring about peace. Prabhupada used to say that when you pack a few dogs in a room, what would you expect? Would you expect a very sublime atmosphere and peace, happiness, contentment in that room? Peep in from a window and see what's going on inside. So similarly, when we have a world full of people with animalistic propensities, dvipada pashu, two-legged animals, what more can we expect than disturbance at the very least? So this verse therefore is very, very important, and it is necessary for all the devotees to understand this and propagate this widely so that the people of this world may understand. Krishna explains here that it is He only who is the enjoyer of everything, He is the proprietor of everything, and He is the ever well-wishing friend of everyone. And on His behalf, of course, His pure devotees are our ever well-wishers. Srila Prabhupada used to sign off practically every letter by saying, "Your ever well-wisher." So Yadubar Prabhu has made a very famous series of videos called "Your Ever Well-Wisher." So Krishna and Krishna's pure devotees are all our well-wishers. Others will throw us in the well of material life, but they will not be our real well-wishers. So this is the three parts, the three-pronged peace formula. The first one is Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam. So the acharyas have explained that Bhoktaram indicates that he is the benefactor, beneficiary, the enjoyer of all yajna, of all sacrifices, and this particularly refers to those engaged in the path of karma kanda and also karma yoga, because they may perform so many different kinds of sacrifices. Then there is tapasam, bhoktaram tapasam. Tapasam means those who perform austerities. So this refers to particularly the jnana yogis, those on the path of jnana yoga who perform very, very rigid austerities. So the enjoyer of the fruit of those activities is actually supposed to be Krishna only. And then Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, that Krishna alone is the proprietor, the only proprietor of all the planets and the demigods thereon. This refers particularly to the karma yogis and also to some extent to the other yogis, the Ashtanga yogis, who try to see the Lord in the heart as Paramatma. The Lord as Paramatma is also the Lord of everything. He is the proprietor of the entire creation. And then Suhridam Sarva Bhutanam, that is also the Paramatma. The Ashtanga Yogi, by the process of bhakti, tries to realize the Lord in the heart, the super soul. Suhridam. The Lord is the true well-wisher and benefactor and friend of every living entity. Actually, the root cause of our being here in this material world is the enjoying propensity. Purushah prakriti sthohi bhungte prakriti jair guner karanam guno sangosya sad asat yoni janmasu. Krishna explains in the Gita that the moment the living entity develops the desire to enjoy, then he is thrown into this whirlpool, this material pool, and then he has to undergo repeatedly birth and death in different species of life. Sat asat yoni janmasu. Good the higher and the lower species of life, he has to repeatedly take birth. And the enjoying spirit basically comes from a spirit of envy of the Supreme Lord. Because factually, it is only the Lord who is the enjoyer. And when we envy his soul enjoyership, his status of soul enjoyer, then we are thrown down here into this material world. Ichha dvesha samuttena dvandva mohena bharata sarva bhutani sammoham sarge yanti parantapa. So ichha and dvesha. Ichha means a hankering for material pleasure, for lording it over. Dvesh means envy or aversion. Both are two sides of the same coin. So when the duality of these two appears, then the living entity is sent into this material world. We see this principle of envy strongly manifested in many personalities in the Srimad Bhagavatam. For example, Shishupal. Even as a child, even before he could learn to talk, he was blaspheming Krishna. Generally, when we see how children as they grow up learn to speak, it can be a fascinating study. The first things they learn usually are they call out for the mother or the father, or they learn to speak certain words about food and such things. So Shishupal, even before he could learn the usual things that children learn, was learning how to blaspheme Krishna. And he was going on and on and on and on. And finally Shishupal's mother knew that Krishna would finish him. So she begged of him not to do that. And Krishna said, all right, but I'll hold on till he crosses 100 abuses. And then I will have to do the needful. And in the Rajasuya Yajna hall of Maharaj Yudhishthir, when Shishupal went on uncontrollably blaspheming Krishna because Krishna was being proposed by Sahadev, Pandava, for being the beneficiary of the Agra Puja, or the one who is to be worshipped first in the assembly, then once he had crossed over a certain limit, then Krishna brought out his Sudarshan Chakra and cut off his head and killed him and actually delivered him. And everyone in that assembly saw the soul from Shishupal's body come out and merge into Krishna's body. So Shishupal is the embodiment or the personification of envy. Now we may say, well, you know, I am not like Shishupal. I am not envious of Krishna. I don't mind if Krishna has a good time or Krishna enjoys. So, but the question is that, underlying that is the idea that, well, let Krishna enjoy, but let me also enjoy. The point is that it is only one and only enjoyer in this whole creation is Krishna. Everyone else and everything else is enjoyed. Both the living entities who form part of the marginal energy of the Lord, which is spiritual, and also the inert material energy, both are to be enjoyed by the Lord. Of course, the Lord doesn't enjoy the material energy. He is completely satisfied enjoying his spiritual internal potency. But nevertheless, everything apart from the Supreme Lord is in the category of enjoyed. Only Krishna is in the category of enjoyer. So if anybody wants to enjoy, then automatically it means there is a spirit of envy. Just like there can be only one king. And then there's another person who says, I don't mind him to be king, but I would also like to be king. No, it doesn't work out like that. In Vrindavan we see, Krishna wanted to show to Narad Muni the exalted nature of the love of the gopis for him. When Narad Muni came, Krishna said, I have a headache. This is a story that Prabhupada spoke many times. And Narad Muni was worried. Really, my Lord, what can we do? Can we call some Kaviraj or what can we do? He said, no, the only remedy is the dust from the feet of my devotees. So Narad Muni, give me the dust from your feet. He said, what? Dust from my feet? On Krishna's head? Impossible. How is that possible? And Krishna said, well, then go and ask the gopis. Narad Muni went and asked the gopis and he told them Krishna has a headache and he would like the dust from your feet. So can you please give? Immediately the gopis started saying, take as much dust as you like, buckets and buckets of it if you want. And Narad Muni said, don't you realize you may go to hell for this? You're giving the dust from your feet onto Krishna's head, the Supreme Lord's head? So the gopis replied, it doesn't matter if we go to hell eternally. If our going to hell eternally can relieve Krishna of a headache even for a few moments, then our life is worthwhile. So then Narad Muni understood. So this is the meaning of true devotion to the Lord. This is the meaning of complete freedom from envy and self-interest. No enjoying spirit. No desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. Only a desire to give pleasure to Krishna. But the beauty and the wonder of the process of bhakti or devotional service is such that when one does everything in one's power to try to give pleasure to Krishna, one enjoys unlimitedly. This is the paradox. If you try to enjoy, you will suffer. But if you try to give enjoyment to Krishna, then you will enjoy in a way that no one can imagine. The bliss of Krishna consciousness is extraordinary. It is unimaginable for the conditioned living entity. Only a few picturesque analogies are given to give us a glimpse of how great it is. Generally, the jnanis are fond of trying to merge into the impersonal Brahman. And that happiness is much greater than the pleasure of this material world. But the pleasure of bhakti, of pure devotion to the Lord, is so great that it's like an ocean. And the happiness of merging into the impersonal Brahman is like the water that is contained in the hoof print of a calf. So just see the comparison. In other words, devotional life brings about a happiness because one wants to sacrifice one's happiness for Krishna's happiness. Rupa Goswami has enlisted 6 characteristics of devotional service, pure devotional service. And the 5th one, does anyone remember what it is? Sandrananda Visheshatma. What is the meaning of Sandrananda Visheshatma? Yes, bhakti brings about incalculably condensed bliss. Sandra Ananda. Sandra means condensed. Ananda means bliss. Vishesh Atma. Atma means nature in this context. Vishesh means special. So the very special nature of bhakti itself is such that it brings about incalculably condensed bliss. Incalculably. You cannot understand. And why does that come? That is a gift of Srimati Radharani. The internal potency of Krishna to one who has completely sacrificed all desire to become happy, independent of Krishna. That's the secret. If someone wants to be really happy, he or she should try to give happiness to Krishna and to everything connected with Krishna, that is Krishna's devotees. But of course, that must be according to devotional principles. So, in this way we understand Krishna is the only enjoyer. And one should not try to have elbow space on that platform and let me also be there. Krishna, you have your sphere, I have my sphere. No. It is everything is Krishna's property for enjoyment. Actually, only one who owns can enjoy. Who has the right of enjoyment? Why do we say it's only Krishna? Why are we so fanatic in saying only Krishna is the enjoyer? Because everything belongs to Krishna. It is only the proprietor of something who has the right to enjoy it. So because Krishna is the enjoyer, is the proprietor of everything, so naturally he is the enjoyer. And then here, Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam. So he is the enjoyer of our sacrifices, whatever all the sacrifices we do, and also the tapasya, all the austerity we do. In the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is talking about pure devotional service. In a series of 6 verses, he compares and contrasts pure devotional service versus the worship of the demigods and others. In the famous 22nd verse of the 9th chapter, he starts off by saying, Ananyas chintayanto mam ye janah paryupasate te sham nitya bhiyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham. He says that for one who is constantly devoted to worshipping me with great faith, in great devotion, constantly serving me, constantly meditating upon me, ananyas chintayanto mam, with undeviated attention, constantly absorbed in me, constantly worshipping me, pari upasate, I protect what he has and I supply what he lacks. Yoga kshemam vahamyaham. Having said that, then Krishna says, but not everybody is like that. Not everybody just worships me with this ananya bhava, with this undeviated love. Then who are the others? So in the next verse he says, ye pyanya devata bhakta yajante shraddhayanvita te pi mam eva kaunteya yajanti abhidhipurvakam. He says, yaha, those, api, although, anya devata, they worship other gods, not me. Gods with a small g. Krishna is God with a capital G. And others are gods like Brahma, Indra and so on, are gods with a small g. Yaha api anya devata bhaktaha, those who are devotees or worshippers of other gods, of the demigods, they worship him with faith, shraddhaya anvitaha. What about them? Tepi mam eva kaunteya yajanti, they also worship me, O Arjuna, but avidhi purvakam, but in the improper way. So all the sacrifices the karmakandis are doing, those who follow the path of karmakanda, wherein worship of the different demigods is enjoined by performance of different sacrifices and rituals. So they worship these demigods, but Krishna says that actually this honor, this benefit is meant only for me. But because these people are ignorant, so they offer it to the demigods instead of offering it to me. Therefore, worship of the demigods is also my worship, but it is improperly performed. So that is not the way to worship Krishna. Avidhi purvakam. The example the Prabhupada gives often is of watering the root of a tree. Krishna is the root of creation. So you water the root, the water is transported to automatically to all the branches and all the parts of the tree. So when you water the branch, you are watering the tree because the branch is a part of the tree, but that is not the proper way to water the tree. So because the demigods are limbs of Krishna, they are part and parcel of Krishna, therefore worshipping the demigods is also worshipping Krishna, in as much as watering the branch is watering the tree, but it is the improper way to do it. And then, as Krishna explains this point about how it is improper worship, he brings back the same point. Aham hi sarva yajnana bhokta cha prabhur eva cha natu mam abhijananti tatve natas chyavantite. He says, So my dear Arjuna, please remember that it is me alone. Aham hi sarva yajnanam bhokta cha prabhu evacha. I am the bhokta or the enjoyer. I am the prabhu or the master of all the sacrifices that are performed by people. Aham hi sarva yajnanam. Sarva yajnanam is all the sacrifices. Natumam abhijananti. So those who do not know this, they will surely tatvena ataha chyavanti te. Te means they. Chyavanti means fall down. So those who do not understand that it is me alone who is the beneficiary of all the sacrifices that they perform will surely fall down from his position. And he makes further distinction in the next verse about how these different kinds of worship lead to different destinations. Yanti deva vrata devan, pitrin yanti pitravrita, bhutani yanti bhutejya, yanti madhyajino pimam. So Krishna says, those who worship the demigods, go to the planets of the demigods, yanti deva vrata devan, pitrin yanti pitrivrita, those who worship the forefathers, go to the planets of the forefathers. Those who worship the ghosts, bhutas, they go to the planet of the bhutas. Yanti madhyajino pimam, but those who worship me, they come to me alone. So this is the promise of bhakti, that when we serve Krishna, we go to Krishna's eternal planet. The worshippers of the demigods go to the temporary planets of the demigods, where the temporary demigods live. And then Krishna says in the famous verse, patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati tad aham bhaktyupaharitam ashnami prayatatmanaha. That this devotional service is so nice, Arjuna. If someone offers me even a leaf, a fruit, a flower or some water with devotion, then I will accept it. So Krishna accepts the devotion. And then in the concluding verse of these six series of verses, Krishna says, yat karoshi, yat ashnasi, yat juhosi, dadasi, yat, yat tapasyasi kaunteya, tat kurushva madarpanam. My dear Arjuna, whatever you do, yat karoshi, whatever you eat, yat ashnasi, whatever you offer, yat juhosi, whatever you give away, yat dadasi, do as an offering to me. Madarpanam, offer it to me. This is the principle. So every yajna, every tapasya, everything we do is for Krishna's pleasure only. Even eating is an act of sacrifice. Yajna shishtashana santo muchyante sarvakil vishai bhunjate te tvagam papa ye pachantyatma karanat. In the third chapter, Krishna talks about the yoga or the sacrifice of eating. Can eat your way back to Godhead. Because even an ordinary, apparently mundane activity can become a process for spiritual upliftment when it is connected to Krishna, when it is offered for Krishna's pleasure. So this is a yajna. Yajna shishta. What is the remnants of yajna? When you do a fire sacrifice, at the end of it, whatever is remaining that is taken is crushed and some oil mixed, and then everyone accepts it on the forehead. And it's also distributed, the fruits, etc. are distributed to everyone. That's called yajna shishta or yajna avashishta, the remnants of a sacrifice. So similarly, when we offer foodstuff to the Supreme Lord, He accepts it, and by His miraculous and inconceivable potency, it still remains as it is, apparently. But it has now become spiritualized. So when we accept that, it's prasadam, it's His mercy. So that is yajna shishta. So Krishna says in this third chapter that those who accept such remnants of yajna, of prasadam, they actually become liberated from the bondage of karma in this world. But everyone else verily eats only sin, agham papa, grave sin. Even if one is a vegetarian, one is still sinful if one is not offering that food in sacrifice to Krishna. So in this way we can see that everything has to be done for the pleasure of the Lord. Every activity we do, every sacrifice we perform, every austerity we do, is only for Krishna, nobody else. In the Harinam Chintamani, Haridas Thakur, while speaking about the different offenses against the holy name, he talks about the second offense of how one should not consider the demigods like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma to be equal to or independent of Lord Vishnu. He says that one should not offer foodstuffs directly to the demigods, or one shouldn't offer worship directly to the demigods and then accept their remnants, because that is not conducive for the development of our bhakti. In fact, it is harmful. What one should do is to, if one wishes to honor the demigods, one can take the prasadam of Krishna, whether it's a food prasadam or the garland prasadam, and then offer to the demigods. And having done that, then we may accept that. That is accepted. But not to first offer to the demigods and accept that. Haridas Thakur even says that we should not even accept prasadam, so-called prasadam, that is offered to a deity of Krishna, but not by a devotee. It's offered by a Mayavadi, or it's offered by some pantheistic, a demigod worshipper who thinks there are many gods, Bahu Ishwaravadi. Bahu Ishwaravadi means one who thinks there are many gods. So not only should one not offer or accept prasadam of the demigods, one should not even accept the prasadam that is offered to Krishna or Vishnu by non-devotees, because the conception that they have in their mind in the worship is offensive. It is not a devotional sentiment, because underlying their respect in offering that to Krishna is the belief that the deity is different from Krishna, the deity is not absolute, and Ganesh, Durga, etc. are also the same as Krishna. Krishna is not an independent Lord. There's also this one and there's that one and this and this, they're all equal. So we partake of that mentality through that prasadam. Similarly, in some parts in India now, there is a practice of offering food directly to the forefathers. Of course, in other countries there is no such practice at all. It's only in India that to some degree at least it is still prevalent. But even then there are many, many wrong practices because of sheer ignorance. I remember in some place one devotee who comes from a certain Kshatriya community, and they eat meat. They eat meat and they drink. You know, that's how they think that that is their right as Kshatriyas to do that. And habitually they offer meat to the departed forefathers. And they have the photo of the ancestor, whatever, and then they offer meat there. And then they distribute that prasadam. So there are many such wrong practices going on. But the Shastra says that even when we offer to the Pitris, we should offer only Krishna prasadam. Nothing else but Krishna prasadam. And Krishna doesn't accept meat. Krishna is accepting only patram, pushpam, phalam, toyam. Not andanam, matanam, and so on and so forth. He doesn't say, I'm offering all these things. So we can't offer this. We can't offer these things. And even if it's vegetarian items, you shouldn't offer it first to the forefathers. You should offer it first to Krishna, and then offer the prasadam to the departed forefathers. In other words, nobody but Krishna has the right to enjoy the fruits of our sacrifice and even our austerities. So this austerities is the path that's generally followed by the jnana yogis. So whether one is a karmakandi or a karma yogi or a jnana yogi, one should offer the results of one's sacrifices and austerities to Krishna. Then Krishna says, Sarva Lokam Maheshwaram. That's the second part of the peace formula. He says that everything belongs to me. In the Bhagavad Gita also he says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo mattah sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. That everything, I am the source of all the spiritual and material worlds. Everyone who understands this properly worships me with great devotion. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita and his teachings to Sanatana Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu narrates his wonderful pastime about Brahma visiting Dwarka to meet Lord Krishna. I'm sure many of you may have heard this story. Brahma came one time to Dwarka. This was about 5,000 years ago when Krishna was in his manifest Leela in Dwarka. And the doorman came to Krishna to say, well, there is somebody there and he says his name is Brahma and he wants to see you. So Krishna told the doorman, please go and ask him, which Brahma are you? So then he asked Brahma. Brahma replied. Brahma was very surprised to hear this question, but he said, tell Krishna, the four-headed Brahma has come, because the Brahma in our universe has four heads. So the doorman dutifully carried the message back and Krishna said, all right, send him in. And then Krishna said, welcome my dear Brahmaji, so please tell me why have you come here? And Brahma said, well, I will tell you later my lord, but before that I have one question. Why did you ask which Brahma has come? Does it mean that there is any other Brahma in this universe apart from me? Then Krishna closed his eyes, meditated for a moment, and within his mind he beckoned all the Brahmas and all the Shivas and all the Indras from all the material universes in the material creation. And they all appeared there in an instant. Millions upon millions of Brahmas, millions and millions of Shivas, millions of Indras. Our Brahma had only four heads. But there were some Brahmas who had 10 heads, some 100, some 1,000, some 1,000,000. Our Shiva may have 5 heads, but there were others with many, many heads. Our Indra has eyes on his body. But there were other Indras with thousands of eyes on the body. And all of them were standing there. They came in front of Krishna. They bowed down. And the sound of their helmets clanging on the floor made a tumultuous sound. And by Krishna's inconceivable potency, none of these Brahmas, none of these Shivas, none of these Indras could see anyone except himself and Krishna. Every one of them thought that he was alone with Krishna and that Krishna had come to his universe. Only our Brahma, our fortunate four-headed Brahma, could see the whole spectacle, could see what was going on. And all his four heads were bewildered completely. And then Krishna had a nice discussion with each of the Brahmas. So, how is everything in your universe? Is everything going well? Yes, my dear Lord, by your mercy everything is going well. The asuras have been creating trouble, but by your mercy we have been able to subjugate them and everything is going on as per your plan. Please keep your causeless mercy on us. And then in this way Brahma and Krishna sent them off with words of encouragement and blessings and they all went away. And then Brahmaji understood what was he. In front of all these Brahmas and Shivas, he was considering himself to be like a rabbit in the midst of elephants. So generally Brahma, Krishna did this because he sensed that Brahma may have got a little proud that he was the chief living entity of this universe, the creator of this universe, having four heads because of the four directions. And Krishna wanted to tell him that there are millions and trillions of universes. And each of them there is a Brahma, there is a Shiva, there is Indra, there is a whole phalanx of demigods. And I am the Lord of all of them. All these universes are coming out from the pores of the skin of the expansion of the expansion of my expansion, Mahavishnu. So how great is Krishna is not possible for us to understand. Prabhupada used to say there are some religious faiths which declare God is great, Allahu Akbar. Right? That's true. God is great. But how great? That we can understand by studying Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita and so on. Otherwise we just hear general declarations of His greatness. He has created the world in 7 days or whatever number of days. But how great is He? We get some glimpse from the Vedic scriptures. So Krishna is the proprietor of everything. And not only is He the proprietor, but He is also the controller. He is able to control everything He owns. Especially those who are tenants, or rather landlords in India who have sublet their properties to some tenant who refuses to vacate. You know the story. On paper you are the owner, but you have no control. But Krishna is not like that. He is the proprietor and He is also the controller. And therefore it is He alone who has the right to be the enjoyer. So therefore these two are connected. Bhoktaram Yajnatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. So that's the second point. The third point of the peace formula is Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. That Krishna is the ever well-wishing friend of all the living entities. Prabhupada many times used to explain this word Suhrid. In different lectures he has said this. That there are different words, different kinds of friendship. Sakha is an intimate friend. Mitra is a social friend. Bandhu is an official friend. But a Suhrid is a friend who is a genuine well-wisher. Their relationship is something like that of a father and a son, Prabhupada says. So Krishna loves all the living entities who are His parts and parcels, and He cares for every one of them. Krishna even loves the atheists and the blasphemers. Krishna loves the animals, the insects. He loves everything and everyone in creation. That is His all-encompassing love. The living entity forgets Krishna in the material world. But Krishna never forgets. Just like generally the children will forget the parents, but the parents usually don't forget the children. So the living entity, having forgotten Krishna and left Krishna, are here in this material world trying to enjoy independent of Him. But Krishna is always thinking and planning for their welfare. What can I do to deliver this particular living entity? So therefore Krishna accompanies the soul in the soul's journey throughout the different bodies and the universes in the material world. From the time the soul enters into the material world till the time the soul goes back to Krishna Loka, to the spiritual world, the Lord is always with the soul as a super soul, as a Paramatma. Upadrashtanumantacha bharta bhokta maheshwarah Paramatmeti chapyukto dehesmin purushah paraha. So Krishna explains that I am the upadrashta, I am the overseer. I see everything. I am the witness. Anumanta, I am the permitter, sanctioner of all the activities of the living entity. Bharta, I am the master. Bhokta, I am the enjoyer. Maheshwaraha, I am the Lord. Paramatmeti cha api uktaha. Therefore I am called the Paramatma or the Super Soul. Dehesmin purushaha paraha. And I am that enjoyer who is living within the body, apart from the local enjoyer, that's the spirit soul. So as the spirit soul, as the Paramatma in the heart, Krishna is constantly guiding us. Prabhupada says in one lecture somewhere, it is a Paramatma, being the ever well-wishing friend, reminds the cat, living entity in the body of a cat, okay, now you are born as a cat, this is your food. And the cat understands, oh, he sees a rat, yeah, that's my food. How does the cat know that rat is my food? Because it is the Lord in the heart who gives him the intelligence to understand. But human beings are such that despite Krishna giving us the intelligence to understand what is our food, we go after the tiger's food and the other's food. The meat is not meant to be our food. Krishna says, I have wonderful prasadam arrangements for you. But we want to deny Krishna's arrangement and go for the arrangement he has made for the tigers and the leopards and so on. No one but Krishna can be our well-wisher. And also those who are empowered by Krishna with pure devotion can also be our well-wishers. Of course, we have crossed the time limit. But this is the important point. One who understands these three principles, that Krishna is the only enjoyer of our sacrifices and our austerities, that Krishna is the supreme proprietor, the only proprietor of everything, and that Krishna is our only well-wisher, can attain peace. If individually everybody accepts this principle of Krishna as the predominator in every respect, then there can be peace, as Prabhupada says, individually and collectively. So we'll stop here. Are there any questions, comments? Yes. How can we? Practically, how can we chant Hare Krishna for the pleasure of the Lord? By doing it because He wants us to do it. And remembering that, yes, it is Krishna. I'm chanting for Krishna's pleasure. I'm not chanting for destroying my sins. I'm not chanting to gain something material in this world. I'm not chanting even to experience peace or to experience spiritual happiness, no. I'm only chanting to please the Lord. Therefore, although a devotee tries his or her level best constantly to improve the quality of chanting, still it's a hard struggle because the mind keeps wandering. But a devotee who chants for the pleasure of Krishna does not get disheartened and discouraged. Because the devotee understands that my mind is not mine. It's not in my control, it's in Krishna's control. If I surrender and submit my mind and my senses to Krishna, then Krishna will control at His time. Therefore, even if I'm not able to focus my mind on chanting, I will not get discouraged and stop chanting or give up the fight. But rather, I will go on chanting because Krishna wants me to chant and my effort is what pleases Him. So, the test of our chanting to please Krishna is that we are constantly putting in effort, struggling with our best ability, taking all proper precautions to chant well. That is a test that we are really doing it for Krishna's pleasure. And we will do everything necessary to chant well. Common sense things. For example, there are many devotees who will lean their back against the wall, maybe spread out one foot or one leg, and then lean against something, and then just chant. And you can rest assured that within a few minutes, the devotee will be either asleep or will be thinking about something else. Or the devotee should be careful to avoid jabber japa. You know what is jabber japa? Chatting, chatting, chatting more while doing japa. Too much of talking. Japa time, we should try to be focused. So if we're really wanting to please Krishna, we must do what is required. Unless there's something really important that requires our attention at that time. And even if it does, we should be very brief and get back to our chanting. In ISKCON, japa time is also the email time. And people sit and start doing their email. So if we take our japa very seriously, we can understand that we want to please Krishna. Any other question? Yes.
Thank you.
The question is that the demigods are also devotees of the Lord. So what is the harm in offering them bhoga and accepting their prasadam? You see, the point is that in general the worshippers of the demigods have the wrong conception about those demigods. They either think that that particular demigod is the supreme, or they think that he is supreme along with several others, and they do not see the difference between that demigod and Krishna. They do not understand the supreme position of Krishna. Therefore, the conception of the mentality of the person offering the bhoga is what spoils the offering. Secondly, the demigods reciprocate with the consciousness of the person offering the bhoga. If it's a non-devotee offering, if a non-devotee worships the demigod, then the demigod accepts it in that spirit. So therefore, even though the demigod may be a pure devotee, but because he is acting now in his capacity as a demigod, not as a pure devotee, so he has accepted that bhoga as a demigod and accepted that fruitive mentality of that, or that wrong conception of that of worshipper. So that prasadam is not pure. And what if a pure devotee offers to a demigod with the understanding that here is a pure devotee? Well, that may be acceptable to some degree. We offer something Lord Shiva, accept Lord Shiva's prasadam, but that it must be done by a pure devotee. However, as Haridas Thakur has explained, the general custom is for us to please the demigods more by offering them Krishna's prasadam. There is a story of Chandidas that I like to narrate sometimes. The Chandidas, before he became Krishna's devotee, was, as his name indicates, Chandi Das. He was a servant of Chandi or Kali. And he would offer all kinds of things to Kali and worship. His brother lived next door. He was a Vaishnav. As Vaishnavas are, this brother was poor. And as Kali worshippers generally are, Chandi Das was wealthy. And he had a nice beautiful garden in front of his house. And the Vaishnava brother would sometimes look at these flowers. Oh, what a nice garden. I wish I could have these flowers to offer to Krishna. One time, the brother was looking at Chandidas's garden and he saw a particular flower which he liked very much. And in his mind, he offered it to his deity of Krishna. And by Krishna, by providence, arrangement of providence, Chandidas picked up that very flower and offered it to Chandi. And Chandi appeared before Chandidas. I am very pleased with you, O Chandidas, because you have offered me this flower. So why? I offer you flowers every day, so what is so special about today's flower offering that you have appeared in front of me? So because you have offered me Krishna's prasadam, so I am much more happy than when you have offered me just an ordinary flower, because Krishna is my Lord also. So then Chandidas says, but, O Goddess, why did you not chastise me before? Why did you not tell me, O stupid Chandidas, you offer me Krishna Prasadam only? Why did you not tell me that? So Chandidas, the Kali replied, well, you never asked me. You wanted to worship me in this mood, so I reciprocated in that mood. But today you gave me Krishna Prasadam, so I am happy. So the demigods are more happy when we offer them Krishna's prasadam. So therefore, as Haridas Thakur has mentioned in the Harinam Chantamani, we should take Krishna prasadam and then offer it to the demigods. And then, if we do that in a devotional mood, then we can accept that prasadam, those remnants, that is acceptable. One last question. Anybody else? Yes. 1 minute, yeah. Yes, we have separate plate for Prabhupada. We do offer to the pure devotees of the Lord like that. That is part of our Archana Vidhi, our process of worship of the deities. But that is a standard practice on the altar. We have a plate for Prabhupada here also. We have a plate for the deities, each of the deities. Yes. That is done. That is also part of the practice. Yes. But when you go to a temple of Lord Shiva or of any of the demigods, you may offer respect, as we should offer respect. We shouldn't think, oh, it's just a demigod. Oh, we should not disrespect. Rupa Goswami says in the Nectar of Devotion that we should not disrespect the demigods. But that doesn't mean that we should worship them as independent. So we can offer respects to them, but if there's anything to offer, we should offer Krishna Prasada. That's the point. Yes, Mother. Did Krishna appear? Does Krishna appear in the different universes in the material world at the same time? Well, in every universe, Krishna is present in his different expansions, in his different forms. For example, every universe has Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. Every universe has Kshirodakshayi Vishnu. Every universe has so many forms of the Lord on the different planetary systems. So the Lord is present in every universe at all times. However, certain pastimes of the Lord take place sequentially. Prabhupada explains this in one place. For example, when Krishna appeared in our universe, here in Vrindavan, in this earth planet, he killed Putana. And then after that, even though his Prakat Leela was going on here, manifest pastimes were going on, he again appeared in some other universe and he killed Putana in that universe. Having killed Putana there, he appeared in a third universe and he started killing Putana there. So sequentially all the pastimes of Krishna are going on like this everywhere. But as a Supreme Lord, certainly Krishna is present at all times in every universe, because without Krishna's presence, the universe cannot exist. Just as the body cannot exist without the soul, so as Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, as Kshirodakshayi Vishnu, Krishna is the soul of the universe. Okay, so we'll stop here. It's quite late. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Gaur Premanande Hari.